Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome into this very, 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 very special edition of Frederick Uncut, the award-winning podcast, Frederick Uncut. I am here, New Spires Arts in the house, as she said. Elizabeth Lucas,
you.
How are you this afternoon?
Doing great. How are you, Colin?
I'm okay. I have a headache. We're going to power through. Okay. Hopefully get through it. And Amade is here.
Hey.
The second time we've done one of these together. Mm-hmm. Very happy about that. Love spending time with Amade. We did John Healy before.
Oh, great.
Have you had time to speak
with John? Oh, yeah. He's so supportive of what we're doing, and we're talking about partnering together on some things, so I hope we'll have a close relationship and be a resource for them.
Yeah, he's the best. He's my favorite person in Frederick. I tell him that all the time, and he tells me to stop saying those sorts of things, so I hope he's listening. So we always start at the beginning, and I am wondering... for those who don't know, perhaps, where you came from, how you got into the arts, all of those things. If you'd like to give us a quick abridged version of...
how I got it. Wow, you're going back. Yeah. Okay, well...
I did see that you grew up in Indiana, Bloomington, I think.
Yeah, Bloomington, Indiana. Okay. I recently found in my mother's basement some production notes I made when I was 8.
Wow.
Directing my cousins in a production of Cinderella. So it was at least back that far. It's hard to exactly target when the start was.
Wow. Eight, you were writing production notes. What
production
were the notes like?
Oh, gosh. I had a design for the top of the cardboard castle we were doing.
Wow.
I had some costume sketches. Huh. Had, you know, a character list.
Were you a demanding director back then?
Probably. It took me some New York City seasoning before I became the highly relaxed and collaborative person that I am now. I did not start that way.
So you grew up in Indiana, and you went from there to?
Northwestern University. Northwestern. I was there and then stuck around Chicago for a few years. Did a lot of assistant directing, all stage at that point, opera, musical theater, and a little bit around the country, but mostly in Chicago. Chicago has this interesting gap between free theater and professional theater, and you pretty much have to leave Chicago to work professionally in Chicago. At least it was that way at that time. So I moved to New York, where many a friend had already transferred to. And about 3 months after I moved to New York City, I got offered a job in Chicago. But I stuck around New York. I was mostly only directing musicals at that time. I became one of the founding producers of the New York Musical Theater Festival, which has grown and become this huge institution. But we started in an enormous project. Even our first year, we produced 30 new musicals that first year. And I also started exploring some different kinds of stories, and I found this one particular story that I said, I love this. I want to make this happen. It's not a stage thing. So I went and got a film certificate at NYU and made it into a movie musical.
Wow.
And so I've been going back and forth between musical theater and movies ever since. I have 3 feature films, and I was in New York for about 15 years. And then I have twins. They're 6 now. They were 2 when New York City and twins stopped really going together very well. So I kind of parachuted out of there, and my dad has a horse farm in Newmarket, and so that's where I landed. Where we live.
So was your dad originally from the area?
Not originally. He's been here a long time, though.
Okay. Was he from Indiana as well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. So
yeah. Most of my family's Indiana-based.
So how old were you when you went to New York, when you decided to make that jump?
24.
How did that go? Was it intimidating? Was it inspiring?
Oh, God, no. I got off the plane and was like, I'm home! And really, I felt that. You know, till the day I left, I still feel that in some ways.
Do you miss it then?
Oh, of course. But Frederick is an incredible town, and it's a great town for raising little ones. And I love the sort of passionate artistic community that I'm starting to crack little by little. And certainly being part of New Spire Arts is helping me meet the local art scene. And what I hear is a lot of interest and frustration about, again, that sort of Chicago problem, but in minor scale, of there not being a growth path that is local. And that's one of the things that I hope I can help start designing for Frederick County artists, is how do you perfect your craft here and then have an outlet for that craft? How does Frederick become a better creative home for somebody who wants to be really serious about the arts?
How does Frederick become a better creative home? That's a good question. Can you answer that?
Sure. Well, it's a lot of different, we're tackling the problem from a lot of different angles. One is purely educational. You know, there's a lot of acting classes, a lot of dance classes. There isn't a directing class in town or a sort of technical filmmaking. I mean, there are some programs here and there, but a real focal point to come together and learn the technical skills you need to be a leader in the performing arts, and not just a performer. I mean, not that that's, you know, unimportant, but strong leadership skills and respecting the art of directing or of producing or of writing, you know, understanding that these aren't just a thing you say, hey, I want to do that and hop up and do, and you're great at it. That there's a process. You still hop up and do it, but you learn from it and develop it. So one of the first series we're offering is what I'm calling a leadership development series, where we're offering some workshops this summer that are specifically about that. We're offering directing. We're offering stage combat. We're offering improv. We're trying to find the things that aren't offered here, and we hope we'll get a response to it, because if people show up for that, then we start expanding those programs and make them year-long programs.
Stage combat?
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
Stage combat.
That sounds like it's just like fake fighting?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
How
to look like you're having a fist fight or a sword fight on stage without anybody getting hurt.
Wow.
So you're teaching them how to professional wrestle. Next stop, WWE.
Next stop.
That's right.
Which is its own kind of performing arts.
That's very true.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's exactly true.
Yeah.
I see Amade writing notes.
Yeah, I do have notes. And, you know, I recently interviewed a photographer. His name is Devin, for another story. And he went to the FCC, Frederick Community College. And unfortunately, he didn't have enough money and he had to drop out.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I was wondering, for people who, you know, maybe they can't commit to a semester long, you know, price tag, you know, are there ways in which, you know, adults can continue their learning?
Yeah. Well, there's kind of two levels to that. As an organization, sustainability is a major part of the mandate. And we've seen that a lot in Frederick, where you know, people will tell me about this great project and a great program. And, you know, I'll have 20 people tell me about the same program and how great it was, and that it fell apart as soon as somebody left or got sick or they lost their space. And that speaks to a lack of institutional support. And it comes back a little bit to that leadership development thing, but organizational development that gives people a structure. So my mandate is about sustainability. And so there are going to be prices and we're not going to be free. But at the same time, Frederick has a wonderful not-for-profit network that we've been meeting with, very actively trying to find partnerships with. So I think the question is really going to be, can we find the right resource organization to partner with to provide those scholarships to somebody who has a passion or a talent and doesn't necessarily have the resources? So we're trying to find those ways through it while still holding on to that sustainability so that we can be around for everybody for a long time.
For sure.
Yeah. So, you know, that's developing. It's our very first summer of programming, but we hope the answer will be yes.
Speaking of the first summer, though, do you have specific goals in mind by the time the summer ends? We're already halfway through June.
Yeah.
And I guess officially summer hasn't begun, right?
Right, next week.
Next week. But what? Well, by the time this runs, it could
be.
So, yeah, do you have things, specific things, that if you get to September and they have happened, you will feel like the summer is a success?
If we fill up a good portion of our classes, that means we're reaching the community and we're engaging them and we're offering things that are interesting. That will inform a lot of what we decide to do in the fall. One of the major goals of the summer is just to, as an organization, as a new organization, we've been around 6 months, is to have a practice run. It's not an intense schedule, but it is enough that we need to figure out our processes and how we're gonna process everything. It's also getting spaces activated. You know, we have two buildings. Between the two of them, it's about 60,000 square feet. And that's not all coming online right away.
Yeah.
We have one floor of one building coming online this summer. And our ability to continue the growth path that we have set out is going to be dependent on the community becoming engaged and wanting to show up for what we have to offer and wanting to use the space for their own things that they're doing. And, you know, so it's sort of the first foray, the first communication with the community starts this summer.
This is the Artomatic building, correct? Or am I wrong about
that's
that?
That's one of the two buildings. Okay, yeah, the old Artomatic building.
So I think a question to ask then, even though everybody might know the answer, what happens to Artomatic whenever Artomatic wants to happen?
You know, Artomatic is meant to be mobile. It's not necessarily meant to be the same thing every time. And it's on a 3-year cycle. Mm-hmm. So the soonest it would come back would be in, you know, 2 years from now. And if it did, it wouldn't be in our building, I think, because we will be up and running in a different way. But we are certainly connected into the real estate in Frederick that if they want to come back, we can perhaps facilitate finding the right space for it. Hmm. There's so much growth in Frederick, and at the same time, there are vacant properties. I mean, how awesome would it be to, you know, to have had Artomatic at the Fredericktown Mall or something? I don't know. Yeah. You know, there are other places to have it. One of the things I'm especially interested in is the idea of immersive art, which is a little bit in line with what Artomatic does. They do it in the geared towards the visual arts. Immersive theater tends to be much more towards the storytelling aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And as we grow that immersive program, I hope that perhaps the people who are excited by Artomatic and participated in Artomatic will join us and help make those environments happen. And maybe we take what Artomatic does and we raise it to a storytelling level that's maybe even better than an individual artist can do, if we can pull together some interest and some collaborations.
Fun. That sounds interesting. Yeah. We'll do that. Yeah. We'll go.
Great.
So the floor that's open, is that in the Artomatic building?
Yeah, the old Department of Ed building.
Okay.
It's the first floor, the entire first floor. If you went through there during Artomatic, you saw there were a lot of, you know, crappy little old office walls and with holes in them. And, you know, you can't have a practice room with a hole in the wall to the next practice room. So we just cleared out a bunch of old walls. We cleared out some rugs. We cleared out that big U-shaped desk, which I hear has a whole lot of history. And polished the floors, put some new rug in, and it's painted it all white, and it just looks beautiful and shiny and bright. And it's 7 rooms that will be available for our programming and for other arts organizations and for any organizations in the county to come in and use.
I'm interested in knowing, this was a question we asked John Healy when he was on a bunch of months ago, because being sort of the director of the Weinberg is a pretty cool job, and it's one that I think what I said to him was, you don't necessarily find that in the Help Wanted section of the newspaper. You know, I'm always interested to know how people get these types of jobs. How did you get involved with this project? Did they seek you out? Did you seek them out? How did that go?
Well, the Osherman Family Foundation, which is catalyzing all of this and which purchased these two buildings, they had been looking for this position, I think, for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And from my point of view, you know, I was here trying to get my little ones to kindergarten. And as soon as I poked my head up, I saw this job listing. And I was assuming I would have to leave. I was assuming that once my kids got old enough that it'd be time to move, because there wasn't really opportunity for the kind of thing I do here, or I would have to figure out, you know, production from home, or, you know, there were options, and I was exploring that. And then I saw this ad and was like, oh, well, that's obviously me.
So there was an ad.
It was going, they had a search firm, and it crossed my desk and was like, okay, that's what I'm doing next.
Wow.
It was really,
that's
so I wrote probably the best cover letter of my life saying, this is why you're going to hire me right now. and then I started.
Wow. How long ago was that?
October.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. So this has all happened in a relatively
really
short
fast.
Amount of time. What were you doing then when that came across your desk? What else were you doing?
Well, I was in the process of optioning a novel to turn into television series. And I was working on some other creative properties. And I had started, you know, reminding artistic directors across the country that I exist. And, you know, I had just started that process, really. I just poked my head up. So it was good timing.
You have 3 movies. Mm-hmm. I have it written down. One is a thrasher.
A thriller,
a
yeah.
A thriller thrasher, a sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
And then what was the third one? It's sort
a movie
of
musical.
A musical, that's right.
Yeah.
They're all based in New York,
yes.
Correct? So have you ever thought about writing any stories outside of New York?
Absolutely, yeah.
And have you done that?
Yeah, you know, those three features, sort of 9/11 and my filmmaking coincided. Mm-hmm. I was literally shooting my first short film ever when 9/11 happened. And
wow.
That interrupted it, and we had to finish a month later, and we thought it was all going to fall apart. And, you know, so those two events for me and my life and my timeline are intimately joined. Mm-hmm. So for those three feature films, those were very much about living in New York and the grieving process in their own really genre out there ways, but they were that.
Mm-hmm.
And they, so those movies were me processing what it is to be a New Yorker.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done that now. It's kind of an informal trilogy. I call it my Red, White, and Blue trilogy because it's Red Hook, Clear Blue Tuesday, and Fade to White are the names of the three movies.
Yeah.
And so I'm done with that topic. And the next thing, you know, the novel I was trying to option is based in Atlanta. So
okay, why, you know, Atlanta?
Because I fell in love with the novel.
Oh,
that
makes sense.
Yeah.
So New York, do you miss it?
Sure, I miss it. But
do you want to go back?
No. Well, not
now. No, I live
in
New York.
I want to visit a lot. But
I don't want to go back. This is the thing. The mothers with the strollers,
yeah.
I felt so sorry for them when they would have to take their strollers up the steps on the subway.
Oh, all the time.
And I would look at them because I oftentimes didn't help because I just let other people do it for me.
No judgment.
I felt like in a nutshell, like how hard it is to have kids in New York City. I mean, that is crazy.
Honestly, for the first 2 years, it was perfect because
you're
never isolated.
True.
You know,
true.
If you're in your house in the suburbs with a baby, it's intimidating to get out the door.
Yeah.
There were days when I literally, if I was having a bad day at home with twin
mm-hmm.
babies, I would wipe the poop, throw them in the stroller, and put a blanket over them and walk out the door. And you just go to the park and there'd be a dozen other moms or parents, you know, dads, moms, whatever, and you just commiserate. You didn't have to plan it. You just... you know, and I was living in this beautiful apartment with this huge, gorgeous park right out my back door.
Perfect.
And so you never are isolated.
That's
it was
good.
Really great until, you know, when you hit two and they have a lot of movement and no sense. And then that dynamic changes a little
bit. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
How hard is it to stay connected to the arts in the way that you were connected in New York when you're not living in New York? Because that's sort of the mecca of all of that, that sort of culture.
Yeah. Yeah, it's it can be tricky. You know, I'm so grateful for Facebook because I keep up with who's doing what and what the performances are. And Sunday night was
Tony
Awards.
Were
this year, and especially were a little poignant for me because I had so many friends up on that stage. There's actually a picture of one of the nominees on my wall in my office we worked together a few years back, and it was very poignant. And you know, the longer I'm here, the less direct connection I have, but at the same time, having this theater opening here in a year, which is going to have the capacity to bring people in, I really hope I can start to bring those people to me. And and whether it's writers in residence or whether it's, you know, we do something here and we bring in somebody from Broadway to do one of the leads or something, just bringing in the sort of level of professionalism you get from New York performers and New York artists and having that present in the community, I think raises the level for everybody. It's in, not that there aren't some wonderful artists here, and I've met some that are, you know, who've traveled, and I've met some who have just been here. And if you don't have the experience of different cultures and different perspectives and different ways of working, then you don't understand your art. And so to bring in, so I hope that the answer to that question is, I'm just going to bring them here and I'm going to live in the country while I have my New York artist friends close by. That's a little far off, but still, it's the eventual goal is that we'll create that kind of creative excitement here.
Did you have any particular winners or losers that really affected you on Sunday that you'd like to talk about? Were you really rooting for specific categories?
honestly, I wasn't familiar with the plays, but of the four musicals, I'd seen three of them, two in D.C. and one when it was a teeny tiny off-Broadway show. And so, you know, three of the four lead musicals, and they were all so quality and so different. I think anybody who gets to the Tony Awards is just as thrilled as can be. And I mean, there's no losers on a night like that.
Have you been to the Tonys?
I have not.
You've never been to the
Tonys? I have avoided it. I've always kind of said, I'll go when I'm nominated. Or part of a show that is nominated.
Well, there's still time.
Yeah,
There's still time. We'll have the Tonys in Frederick one year.
That's what
we'll do. have you seen anything at the Met? Are you familiar with everybody at the Met?
I'm getting to know their work, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Did you see any productions?
I have seen a few, and I do hope that we'll be a great partner for the Met. You know, they have a lot of energy. They've got 40-something ensemble members who are really excited about what they're doing. And I was just over there this morning talking to their general manager, Christine, who is wonderful. And we were talking about ways we can be supportive of each other, ways that do not threaten what they are doing at all, but that give their 40-something people a little bit more space to grow and try things. Just by adding rooms to the county, adding venues to the county, I think we open up how much they can do. I mean, right now their building is at capacity. They have more wanting to be done than they can possibly schedule in that space. So I hope that we're just nothing but good for them.
That's good. Mate, did you have any?
Yeah, you mentioned your twins, and I was just wondering, you know, are you seeing artistic gifts and talents in your kids?
They've had an unusual childhood already. You know what? Absolutely, yes. And, you know, I think growing up with me, you're going to have just a creative slant on things. We made our first edited movie a couple of weeks ago. Because I had tried before, and it was like, no, there's no focusing this. They're not. And 2 weeks ago, they took direction. Wow. And we were able to do shot and counter shot, reaction shots. Wow. And they actually did everything I said. And we edited it on my little iMovie on my phone. A 30-second chase scene. And it was so much fun.
That's so cool.
Yeah, yeah. And one of them, you know, for her end of school, what do you want to be when you grow up, wrote that she wants to be a director like her mama.
Aww.
And the other one just sings 24/7. And she's like a little songwriter. And I don't mean kids' songs. She sings about her feelings and she sings about her day. And, you know, there's some real honesty to what she has to sing about. Wow. So, you know, it's really fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
I just asked that question because I know that there's a lot of parents in Frederick County who may notice their children have these gifts and talents, and they want them to, you know, be trained and learn the craft. So, I was interested in the workshops and things that you're offering.
Yeah. You know, we have things for all ages, including the very little ones, and, you know, trying it out in the idea of taking risks and finding your voice and finding authenticity is a really central part of my own philosophy about it. So, you know, we're not going to teach traditional dance because there are so many great dance lesson conservatories in Frederick. So we're not going to do that. But we will take that dancer and teach them how to do choreography. Wow. Or we will take that dancer and help them with their storytelling. I mean, it's partly about finding the ways in between what's already being offered. We are not here to take over someone's territory. but it's also about bringing an aesthetic of authenticity and honesty and storytelling to technical crafts. You know, it's great if you can tap dance, but if you can tap dance with meaning, then you're going to have an audience. Yeah, you know,
that's so true.
And so even for the very little ones, one of the first things we're going to start trying out in July, which I hope will become a weekly thing, is a casual Saturday morning event for families that sort of answers some of the things that I have found are difficult as a parent. One, coffee for the parents. Two, a place for the parents to sit. You would not believe how often that's hard. So you're not sitting out in the car or whatever. Yeah. And three, it's just a playful way for little ones to get up in front of a group of people and perform.
That's great.
And, you know, at that age, you're not training them. You're letting them find themselves. So it's an, I hope it'll be a great series that will just continue indefinitely.
That's awesome.
So show up if you want us to continue it.
I was on your website earlier today, kind of doing some research for this, and you have a section where you talk about ask me these different things, ask me about, and one of them.
You were the first person who's ever read it. Congratulations.
One of those, though, it says, ask me about shows I love that are ready for the next level.
Mm-hmm.
How do you take shows to the next level? What does that necessarily entail?
You know, the development process for a musical, and then specifically talking about musicals, that's what I know best. Mm-hmm. But the development process for a musical is very long. And, you know, I have worked with writers as a dramaturg when they're in their earliest stages, helping them find what their theme is and what their point is and making sure their plot flows, you know, and all the way to being the first production of something that's never had a production before. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of steps in between those two things. And there are even more steps between there and Broadway. So, you know, the process of writing requires tenacity mm-hmm. and humility at the same time.
Yeah.
It means you have to really know what your show is and what it's about and never waver from what it's about, while at the same time taking in all of the things that people are not responding to and saying, why is what it this is about not coming across?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, as a director and as a dramaturg, a lot of my work has been about helping the writers really focus what their vision is and get their points across in a way that still engages an audience.
Hmm.
It's a tricky road, you know, that everyone's first show is terrible and, you know, they get their angst went out, they get their, you know, everybody writes the awful stuff first and then they start to figure out there's a craft to it and they might still be writing about the same themes, but just better.
Don't say that about bands who release their first album. I learned that in terms of reviews for the local newspaper, okay. Wherever that is. And you also said this, asked me about my ghost story screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I thought that was interesting. Have you done a lot of ghostwriting in your life? Have you worked with ghostwriters?
Oh, you mean like ghost? No. I mean like it's a ghost story.
Like a literal ghost story.
Ghost story.
Okay, so you must like ghost stories.
I like genre stories. You know, it's the thing about making a horror movie and making a musical is they both are about.
There's so much in common.
There is. You know, you heighten the emotion, and then in one you sing, and the other you kill people. But
yeah,
you're still heightening the emotion,
yeah.
And it's still a sort of a fantasy. I mean, the thing I love about fantastical genres is it lets you actually get really close to emotional truth
mm-hmm.
In a way that is still entertaining and non-threatening. So, you know, that's, I mean, one of my favorite series of all times was Buffy the Vampire Slayer. and I mean, there's just no better example ever of something that where every episode is really deeply metaphoric and on point,
mm-hmm.
and yet it's, you know, zombies and vampires and whatever else. I love that.
Is it the same thing with Walking Dead and the sort of zombie craze now? Do you find a lot of metaphorical things in that?
I didn't get into Walking Dead.
No. Me either.
I'm glad the three of us don't like The Walking Dead. How about our producer? Do you like The Walking Dead?
I fell out of it.
Oh, see? It's not that good. It's not. This is an anti-Walking Dead podcast.
It's just, it's too gory for me. I feel like if I can't eat dinner in front of the TV while watching Walking Dead, I just can't do it.
Yeah.
That's a fair assessment.
I don't, there is definitely a line I cross in that. I had some gore in my thriller, but, you know, like the hostels and then the Walking Dead. I mean, once it gets into being about the gore, it loses my interest.
Yeah.
Is it hard to
me
stage
personally.
People dying? What's the key to a
so
good
fun.
Death scene? Let us in on the secret for the key to a great death scene.
As wacky and unexpected as you can figure it out.
Don't you have to have an act or two is like, oh.
No, not necessarily. I mean, you can. Definitely by the climax, you need somebody to take a long time to die, but on the way there, you got surprises. You open the door, there's a dead person, you know.
Amade wrote a story about you
mm-hmm.
Not too long ago, I believe. And I was wondering if there were things that you did not get a chance to ask her for this story, or things that you weren't able to get into the story for length or whatever it is that, that you would have liked people to read about.
I mean, I think a lot of it you touched on, the background, you know, information. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of interested in just an update on the spaces, you know, because last time we were there, I mean,
it's changed a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, the timeline has changed.
You sat on creaky seats. I almost wanted to apologize to you for like the photographer asking you to sit in those nasty seats. No. I was like, oh, my gosh, I'll let her sit in these seats. But yeah, it was pretty, you know, rough. So where is that now?
Well, as of a few weeks ago, we have an officially approved architectural plan for the new Spire Stages, which is the space at 15 West Patrick Street. And so that is we're in the pricing and timeline phase right now, and we expect that to be built in about a year.
Wow.
So that's going to be, you know, when we talked last time, the sort of trajectory of the timeline was very different. So now we sort of scaled back the speed and spent more time on the architecture so that what we build in this next year becomes a little bit more permanent than what we had originally been discussing. So we expect that in about a year, there's going to be a top quality, theatrical quality black box theater right there that will seat somewhere between 200 and 300 people that will have flexible seating so you could clear the floor for a rock concert or put tables in for a banquet or have traditional theater seating for, you know, different kinds of theater, music, dance. So it's we hope it'll be a very flexible space that will serve the organizations that are already here, in addition to having a presenting series that we offer ourselves and whatever co-producing sort of arrangements we can develop between Frederick, with Frederick organizations, as well as with some organizations in the region.
Yeah, I mean, that would be great because I remember I was trying to see a play at the Met. Yeah. And, like, I got there late, which is typically what I do, but fortunately. But, yeah, it was sold out, and I couldn't, like, go to a play. So I was wondering, are you thinking about, you know, housing maybe certain touring, like, theater troupes and stuff like that?
Yeah, you know, the touring that happens right now, it tends to be the 2,000 seats and up when it comes to musicals. There are some smaller plays that tour, and I know John at the Weinberg is interested in bringing some of those in. He actually talked about, well, maybe he'll rent my space to present a series for the Weinberg, which I love. You know, that's the kind of partnership we're looking for. As far as like smaller musicals that could tour into a smaller venue like this, I hope we can kind of start a network. It'd be really great if we could start a network of theaters that can do 2, 3, 4 person musicals that are really quality, could have great people in it and might travel a bit, but could fit into a space our size. It doesn't have the production value of a traveling Broadway show.
The first priority would be theater, though, correct? It would not be, because you mentioned rock concerts, and that's, I'm interested in that, obviously. Yeah. So you wouldn't stage as many of those as you would plays.
I think, actually, from our committee, our interest is probably more in the music and dance.
Oh, I didn't even know you had a committee.
We have a little committee.
Are you on the committee?
Nope.
No, we're not. I'm not going to talk about the committee, but no. The part of the mandate that came out of our strategic planning process is that nothing gets to sit down there for very long. So, I mean, we're hoping that the Met will want to move a show that's going to sell out up to our venue maybe once a year, but they can't be there all year. You know, we hope that we're going to have a lot of different kinds of things cycling through. And if we get to a nice pattern where in a month we have 4 film events, 4 music events, 4 dance events, and they get to cycle through who gets to be on Friday and Saturday, you know, I think that's a really great starting point for being sure that we're bringing performing arts to the community that are not already here, that appeal, that people feel like they want to have here.
You talked about that being a great starting point. My question to you, this is one of the biggest things I wanted to ask, was what do you think is the most prominent challenge that you face and that you have faced coming in to take this position and to get this off the ground so far? And even looking forward, what is the biggest hurdle? What, you know, has there been something that's just a thorn in your side outside of this podcast right now?
You know, the tricky line is to come into a community that I have not been a part of and listen.
That's tough.
And hear what people need, mm-hmm. and not overpromise, mm-hmm. But become a resource that people can make their own. And you know, that's already been, it's an interesting and it's a tricky conversation. And some people are just like, yes, I've been waiting for this. And some people are like, well, what's that going to do to my organization? Mm-hmm. And you know, and so to come in and say, no, really, we're here to help. Mm-hmm. Bringing a venue like this, bringing a focal point like this to downtown is going to bring more people downtown. Mm-hmm. It's going to bring more tourists downtown. It's going to lift everybody's boat, you know, to have this focal point downtown. So that's the, you know, the major message to get across, really, is that we're here as a service and as a resource and as a quality lifter and as a venue available. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's convincing people of your motives can be tricky.
That's,
you know,
tough.
I just want to have stuff I want to see and not have to drive to DC.
Yes. Well, speaking of that, I mean, are you, is this something you could see yourself doing in 20 years still, 30 years down the line? Do you want to be here? Are you in for the long haul? Or is this something where you've traveled a lot, you've lived in a lot of different places. Do you see the Frederick area as a good place to kind of settle?
You know, we'll see how this goes. I'm very passionate and excited about a lot of the things we want to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's going to depend on what takes off. I mean, I really, I want to build a strong media program. I want to build a strong storytelling presence. I want to, if this becomes a place where we've got a lot of different art forms talking to each other and feeding each other and growing together, then what an amazing place to live. Why would I want to leave?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you can be based in a place and still travel.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Most definitely. We always like to finish things out with something that's fun, but I want to make sure that Amadi gets everything in because she always has the most amazing question is when we were here with John, she had a lot. So I want to make sure you've already done a story though.
I think I'm pretty good.
You're good. Yeah. So you want to jump in on some of these fun questions at the end?
Yeah,
like we do, because we like to do this a lot.
Is this like a speed round?
It's supposed to be like a speed round. I'm glad you said that because this step where we've done a lot of these podcasts now, we were just talking about that earlier, and I always find myself explaining this in the same way. But it never ends up happening the way that we want it to happen. The original conceit was to do 5 questions and you can't respond in any more than 5 words. Mm. But then we always end up asking, I don't know, 26 questions and the answers go on for 3.5 minutes, which is great because they often lend themselves to follow-up questions. Mm. So now that I've given that long-winded description, we're gonna move forward. They're designed to be fun, though.
Okay.
So think fun.
Okay.
Think fun when we go through this. And a little, you know, we'll start with this. You're knee-deep in the arts and theater and all of that. So my question to you is, who is your favorite athlete?
Whoa. That. Oh, man.
Every Broadway dancer I've ever met.
Ooh, good answer.
Nice.
That's a good answer. Okay. All right. So you don't watch sports at all?
You know what? I'm starting to because my little ones love it so much. Mm-hmm. I've been immersed in other things.
Okay.
Which is not a, I love sports. It's not a judgment on sports at all.
There was, on the New Spires website, mm-hmm. there's a little blurb about you and it says that your favorite movie that you've seen recently was Room,
mm-hmm.
from a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know when they asked you that question, so I wanted to ask you if you've seen something you like more since then.
Well, I did see Wonder Woman yesterday.
And what did you think?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. It was a great romp.
Was it
better
really
than
fun. Better than Room?
Completely different from Room, just mm-hmm. apples and oranges. There's a place for both. I mean, the thing about Room that I was not going in expecting to like it at all. The subject matter is not typically a thing I respond to. Mm-hmm. As I said, I love genre. I love the fantasy. Mm-hmm. I love that way of dealing with honesty and to say, okay, well, we're going to be this gritty realism in a shed thing. But it was so beautifully shot and so evocative. And I mean, there was some amazing filmmaking.
It's a tough watch.
Tough watch. Absolutely.
Horror films.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about any modern horror film series of movies that you like more than others? For instance, like the Saw movies, which I...
Not my thing. Not my thing.
Same.
Not even a little.
Nobody likes the Saw movies. But I own all of them. I have an affinity for the Saw movies. I don't know if that's going to incriminate me somewhere down the line, but yeah. I really do. And so, like, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones that are some of the other series that are sort of ongoing now. The Conjuring, like those. Have you seen any of those?
I have. You know, I love this. I love the ones that have a little bit of a wink to the camera. I mean, Scream yes. was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. That series was a lot of fun. I haven't watched a lot recently, to be okay. honest, because, you know, bedtimes and noise into the yeah. next room and stuff. So I'm not going to have a great answer for you, but I do love the things that raise it a style notch.
Do you have a favorite movie director?
Right now, Patty Jenkins.
Okay, right now, how about all time? Any, or you want to know?
Baz Luhrmann definitely is way up really? On the list.
Did you like The Great Gatsby?
I did. I liked The Great Gatsby. Yeah. You know, it was, I understood the story better on that than I had when I read the novel. Granted, when I read the novel, I was in high school, so I'm sure I've developed as a person since then, I hope.
Okay, I always ask this. Nobody gives me a straight answer. I have to ask it. Where's your favorite place to eat in Frederick?
I am a celiac. I have not I have no found idea. My I've, favorite place yet.
I've never heard of that word. What is that
gluten
word?
Gluten-free, right?
It's okay. It's gluten-free, but not the fad kind. The doc. It's the
yeah. It's the actual yeah.
And I get really sick if I eat really? Wheat. So, yeah. So if you know any good gluten-free restaurants, send them my way.
There's places. A gluten-free yeah. bakery in Brunswick, cool. but yeah, that's.
The Baltimore well, Coffee Co. has gluten-free bagels, and so I go there a lot.
Wow. Taking gluten out of life is tough.
Yeah, I've gotten used to it.
So you eat hamburgers with just the burger?
Sure. You know, some places have gluten-free buns, too, okay, but, cool, you know, it's not like I chose I'm going to go on a health food diet.
No, this is a real health condition.
It's a real thing.
It was like you were gluten-free before it was cool to be gluten-free, sounds like.
Oh, I love that it's a fad. It gives me so many more options. I go into restaurants and I say, I need gluten-free. It's like, oh, here's that menu. That was not the case 10 years ago.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, so.
Well, I was going to ask you what your favorite Dorito flavor is, but I guess you can't eat Doritos.
Not into Doritos.
I couldn't live like that.
But
I couldn't.
The party-sized Tostito corn chips, those are
okay.
They're bite-sized. I should say. Those are pretty awesome.
Salsa?
Pico de gallo. Uh-huh. A little more on the mild end.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Queso?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I usually do really well at anything sort of Southwest or Mexican flavored because okay. it's a lot of corn-based tortillas, which are totally fine. Rice, beans, corn chips, I can do that.
What is your favorite board game?
I'm defaulting to everything I've played with my 6-year-olds. You know what? They recently started learning checkers, and it's pretty amazing.
Oh, that would be fun.
One of my 2 girls is unbelievable at checkers. She almost wow. beats me. Wow. Yeah, she's got this visual mind, and she really sees the full picture. It's like, wow, that's like genius.
Do you like to listen to podcasts?
Awkward.
Always when I'm in them.
Only, okay.
I do subscribe to a couple of podcasts.
You do? Can I ask you which ones?
I did listen to Serial.
Oh, yeah. I know. Graham really likes Serial.
Yeah. There were a couple of Broadway ones that I listened to for a while and a little bit of NPR. And
Fresh Air? Wait, Don't Tell Me.
A little bit of Fresh Air. Yeah.
That's good. Amade, do you have podcasts that you listen to?
Yeah, I was a serial addict.
Did you guys listen to S-Town?
I tried to get into it, but I think what happened was that there's a spoiler alert, but the thing that they...
Spoiler alert.
The thing that they thought happened may not have happened, and then I was just like,
Yeah, I was disappointed in all of it, to be honest with you, in all of it. So, where is your favorite place you've ever lived?
Oh, well, that would be the apartment I owned in New York City.
Okay.
I was on the 8th floor next to a park. So it was looking out at treetop level.
Wow.
And it was just the most peaceful place in the middle of Manhattan.
What neighborhood?
Washington Heights. I shouldn't say the middle of Manhattan. It was, the tip of Manhattan.
I'm like, excuse me, I lived in Washington Heights. That's not in the middle.
Okay, so you know my neighborhood.
Yeah, I know your neighborhood. It's the only place you can get an affordable apartment that is like not a shoebox.
I bought an apartment. That's crazy.
It's crazy.
It was not the price that you usually hear about.
Were you in Riverside? Or
no, I was the kind of back of Fort Tryon Park.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
It was so beautiful.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I can step out if you guys
want
to.
No,
it's all know.
Right. We had a connection.
We could talk Washington Heights.
We could talk it for a long time.
There's a musical about that. I could sing you the whole thing.
In the Heights. Yeah. That's, I think that was where the creator of Hamilton.
Yeah, Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah, got his start with that.
So. Yeah, and that's one of those musicals that I saw in its earliest reading stages.
Wow.
And, you know, you have there's a few of those when you're just around New York and around the new writers, and that is like, oh, I saw that when it was like four songs and didn't have a plot yet. And you just sort of feel some ownership when suddenly they win a Tony. Although Title of Show, which was nominated for Tony Award a few years back, are you familiar with it at all?
I'm not familiar.
It's basically a musical about writing a musical for a festival.
Oh my gosh.
And it's hilarious and very sort of self-aware and funny and witty. And that was written for my very first year of my festival. So I really do feel ownership of that one.
Yeah.
You know, it was like literally we had a 30-day submission period. We announced brand new festival, send us your musicals. 30 days later that came in.
Wow.
And they had just written it for us.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
They were just they clearly had a voice. And there was a producer, Kevin McCollum, in New York who heard that there was a really unique voice behind that and shepherded it. And as it still had a long development before it was at Broadway, made it to Broadway. But that was ours.
We'll end with this, and I always love to end on a downer because that's pretty much sums up who I am. What's the most disappointing play you've ever seen or musical?
Disappointing play or musical I have ever seen.
You went in, you had all these expectations, and they let you down.
Oh God, there's nothing I could say.
There's
no serious, because you know anything that makes it to Broadway or makes it to a production has had so much care and love and professionalism behind it. And if I've seen it, I've probably known somebody in it or known somebody involved or known somebody who cares about it. Okay. So, you know, even some things that were enormous Broadway flops, like there was this musical In My Life, which was written by the guy who wrote the Dr. Pepper theme.
And it
was an autobiographical musical, and it got just absolutely panned, and it had this giant lemon come in, and it was like all this surrealism, and it was like I sat in that audience, I was like, I totally dig this. I have definitely seen worse, because there's something so honest about this, and the sort of surrealism and the bravery of going that way. And you know, he had some dysfunctions, and I think it was Tourette's. And so a musical about being a person growing up with Tourette's, I mean, who picks that? But but to go in and just sort of see that authenticity, I've definitely had worse evenings in the theater. So something getting panned and a sort of a personal connection to it aren't always connected.
Okay, that's fair enough. Elizabeth Lucas, this has been a joy. We wish you all the luck in the world, right?
Thank you.
We hope this really works out. We'll have to do this again in a year and update everybody on all the progress that has come on. We hope you...
Well, can I just plug the open house?
Yes, go
ahead. June 27th. Okay. That's a Tuesday. It's from 4 to 8. Come by anytime. We're going to have info sessions at 4:30, 6, and 7. And that is a great opportunity to learn about, to see our architectural plans and learn about the timeline we're on and hear about what's available right now for community or individuals to use.
Okay.
Awesome.
Open house.
Please show up. The more people show up, the faster I get my buildings ready.
Exactly. The future of art in Frederick depends on you showing up to this open house, ladies and gentlemen.
Good.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.